It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
And he's going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline. And it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzin takes the snap.
Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul. And he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, a 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, John Schmelt.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. OTA number, 8 today here at the Quest Diagnostic Training Center. Two more this week. Then mandatory minicamp, 3 days of practice next week. And then the players are gone for really only a little bit over a month, a much shorter quote-unquote vacation period here at the end of June, beginning of July, and then training camp starts nice and early on July 21st. Watch us all celebrate here at Quest so the Giants can get ready for that Hall of Fame game against the Buffalo Bills on August 3rd in Canton, Ohio, which should be a lot of fun. If there's one season the Giants could use a longer training camp and more practice time, it's this year with all their changes. And to talk about some of those changes and kind of where the Giants are right now is Pete Domelatis. He's with Pro Football Focus. You can follow him on Twitter at PFF Pete. Pete, what's going on? Good morning. Long time no speak. How's life treating you, buddy?
Life is good. If I heard correctly, did you get married recently, John?
I will be getting married on June 28th, so it is coming fast and
June
furious.
28th. Okay, well, congratulations in advance.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Pete. And the Giants have been taking some bows this offseason. They've made a lot of additions. They drafted some players. They signed a lot in free agency. But I got to admit, the last few days, I've gotten some calls and some tweets from some angry Giant fans that your boys over there at Pro Football Focus ranked them as the fourth best roster in the NFC East. Would you care to prepare a defense?
Absolutely. So when we were looking through our depth chart, I think it's no surprise to anyone that the Giants are not coming off a good year. And even though their record actually was 7-9, I think we would all agree that they were not as good as that record indicated. And I think they had a lot of roster turnover this offseason, and they really needed to, because when you're looking at their team, when Pro Bowl discussions were coming along and everyone's figuring out, okay, who could possibly make it from the Giants, there really weren't a lot of top-notch players there. I know Antrell Roll, he eventually made it there, but they're not a team with a lot of high-end guys, and I think they added a few of those guys in the offseason. I think Jeff Schwartz can be one of those guys. I think a guy like Dominique Rodgers-Kamari can be one of those guys. But right now they still have a lot of unproven talent. Their defensive line is rather thin. Their linebacking core is nothing to write home about. And their offensive line has a lot of turnovers. So, you look at those three units and wide receivers as well. So, I think that there's the potential to be a very good team this year because they brought in so many new pieces. And if all those pieces gel together, then I think they can be greater than the sum of their parts. But right now, if you're talking from a on-paper perspective, I don't think they're the best team or even close to the best team in the NFC East.
Well, let's do a little, cross and compare. I didn't tell you that I was going to do this, so I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, Pete. Can you give me the way you guys see it, how the Giants compare right now to the Cowboys, to the Eagles, to the Redskins? Is it too simple to say that the Giants might have the most talented defense in the division, but they probably have the least talented offense, or do you see it differently than I do?
I actually would think that. I mean, the Cowboys, you could argue they have the worst defense on paper in the NFL.
Agreed.
You kind of look at that roster and you really wonder how they're gonna be good at all this year, even getting up to their usual 8-8 standards. The Redskins, you know, similarly, they just don't, you know, they have a lot of guys in the secondary. They have some turnover over there. They're still going to rely on D'Angelo Hall to play a starter's share of snaps, and I think it's been a long time since he's been a very good cornerback. And even the Eagles, they still have a lot of young pieces they're trying to put together, and the defense was the weak point of their team last year. I think their safeties are still an issue. Malcolm Jenkins, I know they're excited about adding him in the offseason, but he's only a couple years removed from being one of our worst-ranked safeties in the NFL. So I think right now, if you told me to take one defensive unit from the NFC East, I would definitely take the Giants.
And how about on the offensive side of the ball? Where do you see the Giants lagging behind these other NFC East teams?
I think, especially on the offensive line, I don't think it's even close. The Eagles were one of our top-rated offensive lines last year. And, I mean, you look up and down that line, and they just have studs all over the place. Jason Peters, Jason Kelce, their center, was our highest-graded center this past season. Even Lane Johnson, who had his struggles at right tackle, he improved dramatically in the second half. So it looks like the Eagles are going to, again, have a very good offensive line. Same thing with Dallas, where you know they've invested a lot in recent years, and frankly, I think at the expense of their defense. But their strength is now their offensive line. I also think that you know their receiving core is probably the best in the division, if not second best, behind Washington, who has a lot of weapons over there. So I think the Giants, I guess it's more their firepower that makes you think there's a worst offense in the NFC East right now, just because the uncertainty around Eli Manning after last season, and also you've got Victor Cruz there, which is great, but Jarrell Jernigan looked good last year in limited snaps, but that's a bit of a smaller sample size. Odell Beckham's a rookie. They have literally nothing at tight end right now that's proven at all. So you're looking from a star standpoint, from a skill position standpoint, I would definitely put the Giants at the bottom of the NFC East right now.
We are joined by Pete Domelatis. You can follow him on Twitter at @PFF_Pete from Pro Football Focus. And Pete, let's stick with the offensive side of the ball. I'll circle back the defense up before we say goodbye. How much should Giant fans expect out of Reuben Randle this year? You know, to me, he's one of the X factors on this team. I know you guys measure performance. You don't measure things like potential, but where do you think the player, how much better can he be this year? And, you know, for lack of a better question, where's his ceiling? How good do you think he can be?
I mean, I think he can be a very good, I think he can be a very good second wide receiver, maybe even coaching into that number one wide receiver territory if he puts it all together. You'll see times where he can, you know, he's making plays all over the field. I think he has some good yards after the catch ability. I think he, more than anyone in the Giants offseason offense last year, I think he struggled with Kevin Gilbride's offense and the concepts of their wide receiver options. And oftentimes you saw him running the wrong route. And I just don't think he ever really got it. And I think that's a big reason why they moved on from Gilbride and why, you know, they had such a bad year last year in general. So I know the fans are, everyone's sort of quick to move on because it's been a couple of years for him and he's not a star yet. And we haven't seen him take over games on a consistent basis. So, okay, well, on to the next one. But the thing is when the Giants drafted Odell Beckham, I think it solidified that they'll probably move on from Randle a couple of years from now when his contract is up, but that doesn't mean they're going to move on from him now. And
right.
If you look at the Packers offense last year, I mean, they are using three wide receiver sets on 70% of their plays for the most part. So there's going to be plenty of touches out there and plenty of routes for Cruz, Randle, Beckham, and Jernigan. So I think, I think all four of them are going to get their chance to shine. I think Randle in the new offense has a better chance than most of them.
Now, historically, Pete, rookie wide receivers don't do a ton in their first year, but at the same time, Odell Beckham, a top 15 pick, so the expectations are probably a little bit higher than you'll get from most first-round wide receivers, especially since he's hooking up with the top-quality quarterback in Eli Manning. How much can Giant fans expect from the rookie out of LSU in year number one?
You always want to temper your expectations because even looking at guys like, you know, like a Julio Jones, as good as he is right now. He didn't have 1,000 yards his rookie season in a pretty good offense with Matt Ryan and Roddy White and Tony Gonzalez. So a similar situation that Beckham's coming into now as far as the good quarterback
good
and
point.
Some other guys around him. If you want to be optimistic on Beckham, coming out of the draft, from everything I heard, is he was one of the more polished route runners of all the rookie receivers. So I know there are other guys who were more potential and drafted up in the first round because they can be, you know, that number one wide receiver down the road. I think the Giants took him because he has the potential to contribute right away. So I don't think he'll have as many yards as Cruz or Randall, but I think that he will be able to flash some plays, and I think that, you know, the Giants are going to use him maybe even a little bit more than they used Hakeem Nicks in his rookie season, where he started to kind of come around on the second half of that year. I could see Beckham getting in there even in the first half and making some plays and not having to sit on the bench like a lot of rookies under Tom Coughlin have to do.
Pete, the Giants have a hodgepodge of tight ends, for the lack of a better word. Based on what these guys have done in the league, and I realize Larry Dell and Adrian Robinson haven't really, you know, shown enough and done enough, and there's really not enough information to make a fair judgment on the type of players that they are. But Daniel Fells and Kellen Davis have played in this league and have had, you know, various amounts of success, you know, during their time playing in their past seasons. Based on what the Packers did in Green Bay with their tight ends, how they used them, how do you see this Giants tight end position playing out? Do you see them ever using two tight ends on the field at the same time? And who do you think will eventually come down with this job?
You know, I think right now I still like Adrian Robinson based on his potential. I think, unfortunately, they don't have that. I think the reason I like him is because he has the best chance to be that complete tight end that can block and catch. I think Daniel Fells is definitely more of a receiver. I think Kellen Davis, in his years, he's never shown to be a competent receiver. He's always been more of a blocking tight end. So, you know, maybe you put Fells and Davis on the field together, then, you know, you got one blocker and one receiver. That sort of defeats the versatility of a two tight end package,
right?
Because you want two guys who can do either thing. So, you know, I'm thinking that Adrian Robinson has the best chance to emerge out of all those guys. The one glimmer of hope I would say is that the Giants in their time under Coughlin have shown the ability to turn guys who are decent blockers into also good receivers, so at tight end. So I think of a guy like Jake Ballard, who was mostly a blocking tight end at Ohio State. You know, they developed him into a receiver. Same thing with Kevin Boss and also Martellus Bennett when he was here. He was generally a blocking tight end in Dallas and graded very well for them under our grading system and as a blocker. And then he came to the Giants, and they kind of developed him into that receiver. So I know Mike Pope isn't there anymore, Bill Bright isn't there anymore, but I think that the Giants can still take a guy like Adrian Robinson, who has some blocking potential, and turn him into a receiver. Or maybe even a guy like Kellen Davis, who's never shown that receiver talent before. Maybe he catches a few more balls than you'd think he normally would. So, you know, it's a lot of question marks there right now, but I would ping Robinson as the guy to emerge.
Pete, we've spoken a bunch of times this offseason, and the focus has often been on the offensive line. Between Jeff Schwartz, between the veterans, you know, Charles Brown and John Jerry, throw the draft pick Weston Richburg into the mix, J.D. Walton, have the Giants done enough to address their offensive line issues from last year? And how do you see that unit filling out once all is said and done at the end of August, beginning of September?
I think they've done enough, or they've done all they can do. The one mistake that I think they may have made is holding on to Chris Knee for another year, because I know he has a long history with the organization. They like him a lot, good team guy, and there was a time where he was the gold standard at right guard. He was the best in the NFL by our grades. But last year, even before he was injured, he looked like a shell of himself. And I worry that this is kind of like a Corey Webster situation from last season, where the Giants brought him back for a pay cut just to have him on, and then, you know, it confirms basically that he doesn't have anything left in the tank. The good thing is they have John Jerry there, who I think is a very solid pass protector to back him up. Not a great run blocker, but, you know, it's as a backup right guard, you could definitely do worse. Jeff Schwartz was our top-rated guard in free agency. I think that's a huge upgrade. If you look at our depth chart that we posted for the Giants yesterday, we have him as a high-quality starter, and basically him and John Connor are the two guys that we have there for the Giants offense as high-quality starters. So, you know, I think Schwartz is a massive upgrade. And, you know, at tackle, I think Justin Pugh, he improved a lot last year, and you want to keep him there. And I like what they did at center with J.D. Walton. You and I talked after free agency and worried that maybe the Giants were relying on him too much. They were going to just make him the de facto starter. And even though, you know, he's only a couple of years removed from being our worst graded center in the league, unfortunately they went and they drafted Weston Richburg in the second round. So I think that he can give them a fallback play. And if Walton isn't, you know, it goes back to basically that poor center he was in 2011.
Well, Pete, I'm going to mention the one position on the offensive line you didn't, and it's the one that a lot of Giant fans I know are still kind of freaking out about, to be quite honest with you. And Will Beatty has not been on the field yet in OTAs. He's not expected to be in mandatory minicamp, which means keep your fingers crossed he could pass, you know, the physical he's required to take at the beginning of training camp and he can practice. How much trouble are the Giants going to be in if, for whatever reason, they have to pup Will Beatty, he's not ready for the start of the season? Are James Brewer and Charles Brown really their options at left tackle, or could Justin Pugh move over? How much of a red flag danger zone are the Giants in if Will Beatty cannot return to form?
That is a very good question, and you're right. That's something that I neglected while I was going through them. Beatty, I think everyone sort of had this idea that he wanted to throw Beatty to the Wolves after last season, and yes, he had a very, very poor season. There's no way to look at it any way otherwise. But, you know, he was one of our higher-graded left tackles the season before. The Giants signed him to a contract. They weren't able to cut him for any sort of cap savings whatsoever. So I think that given his potential, given the investment they've made, and given what he's shown in the past, you absolutely have to give him another season there. And unfortunately, if he isn't healthy for whatever reason, I would be very concerned if the Giants have to have Charles Brown at left tackle starting, because he was benched last season by the Saints. He deserved to be benched. He's a bit of a sieve in pass protection. So I think that, you know, if Beatty's not ready for the start of the season and you have Brown there, you could see a lot of the same problems they had early last season where Eli's under duress the entire time. The good thing maybe I could see happening is Jeff Schwartz has that versatility where he's played tackle before in the past. So maybe they could perhaps move Pugh to left tackle, move Schwartz to right tackle, and then maybe switch John Jerry into left guard. But unfortunately, then you're under the situation where, you know, if Chris Knee is also not recovering well, then they're in trouble at right guard. So I think a lot of it hinges on Beatty's ability to get healthy.
We're joined by Pete Domelatis, Pro Football Focus, PFF _ Pete on Twitter. Give him a follow. Pete, let's jump to defense very quickly. For those of you that have heard Pete on this show before, everyone knows what a big proponent and fan of Will Hill you were, Pete, based on his performance last year and how he kind of helped turn around that Giants defense. Talk about what type of downgrade it is from Will Hill to Stevie Brown and how you think that might affect the Giants' defense in 2014.
Yep, well, first off, Will Hill, I thought, was the Giants' best player last season. By our grades, he was the second-graded safety in the NFL last year behind Devin McCourty. Now, that doesn't mean we think he was the second-best safety in the NFL. I mean, I would still say Earl Thomas and Eric Berry were more productive than he was. But, you know, he was definitely top 10. We did our PFF 101 list recently, and he came in as the Giants' only representative at number 86. So,
wow.
You know, he absolutely had a great season. It was one of those under-the-radar things where he wasn't doing a ton of the, you know, I know he had a big interception against the Lions. He had a fumble, forced fumble against the Redskins. But most of his work was sort of under the radar, where he wasn't doing a lot of, more Yalen's work, where he's basically protecting the deep side of the field. So, for example, he only allowed one deep completion all season, and on six attempts, he allowed no touchdowns and had one interception on deep passes in his area of the field. And the Giants allowed four touchdowns on deep passes in those first 4 weeks while Hill was suspended, and for the rest of the season, they allowed two. So you could definitely tell the difference he made in the secondary that once he came back from suspension. Now, as far as the drop down when going to Stevie Brown, I mean, Stevie Brown, he showed a lot of potential a couple of years ago as a playmaker. He wasn't as good as his interception total would lead you on to believe. You know, he made a lot of big plays, but he wasn't as safe of a coverage man as Will Hill was. But you know, I think based on what he did and what he showed in his rookie season, he can definitely, you know, replace a good portion of that production that Will Hill had. But I mean, make no mistake about it, Will Hill was one of the best safeties in the league last year. Given his youth and his age, he definitely could have been one of the best safeties in the NFL, and this is a huge loss for the Giants with his suspension having to let him go. It's really a shame. You know, as they said in the Bronx Tale, the saddest thing in life is wasted talent, and you could definitely say that about Will Hill.
Well done, quoting the Bronx Tale. I like it. We're joined by Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus. You know, Pete, I don't think I ever asked you this offseason about what you guys think of Quinton Demps. I know he's a very effective kickoff returner, but how do you guys see him as a safety?
I think he would be a solid safety. You know, he sort of got thrown down the depth chart in Kansas City last year, but he wasn't particularly poor, wasn't particularly great. He's just sort of that almost Ryan Mundy-ish type guy who can, you know, kind of step in, give you some quality snaps. He's not going to absolutely kill you, and you know, he can sort of come by in a pinch. Now, if you want him to start, you know, 1,000 snaps on the season where he's your only guy, which may be the case if Stevie Brown isn't healthy, then I have my worries. But you know, he's always sort of graded for us as a middle-of-the-road safety where you can throw him in at a pinch, but you don't want to have him as your full-time guy.
Now, we've talked ad nauseum how good the Giants' cornerback position is, Pete. We've talked about the linebackers. For those of you that have, you know, not heard Pete before, he's not quite as high as John Beeson as everybody else. How do you see the outside guys for the Giants, Jameel McClain? But even more specifically, how do you see the competition between Jaquan Williams and Spencer Paysinger at that weak side spot?
Well, the way they've used those two guys are pretty consistent throughout their careers. Spencer Paysinger is going to be their run-stopping guy for a second down. He actually was their three-down guy until Beeson came along. And then you're gonna see them bring in Jaquan Williams as the second linebacker on nickel packages. And unfortunately, every year we talk about Jaquan Williams' potential, and every year we're just left wondering about Jaquan Williams' potential. So I almost feel like, you know, it's sort of the same story over and over. So I think he might be what he is, and that's a solid coverage linebacker who you can play in every down role. But the thing is, the Giants also, you know, under Perry Fuel, they haven't asked their linebackers to be that. You think about even back to years like 2008, they'll have Antonio Pierce there as their middle linebacker, and they want their guy as that three-down guy, and that's going to be John Beeson this year. But after that, they prefer to bring in that third safety so that you only have two linebackers on the field, and you'll bring in a coverage linebacker as your second guy. So I think between the guys like Jameel McClain and Spencer Paysinger and Jaquan Williams, I mean, they're even whoever wins that training camp battle, it's not like they're going to be three-down players anyway. They're going to kind of come in on a rotational basis, and depending on whether the offense is looking to run or pass the ball.
Finally, Pete, let's talk about the defensive line. For every team, Pro Football Focus has anointed a secret superstar for that organization, and yours lands in the Giants' defensive line. Why don't you tell us about him?
Yep. So, you know, in our secret superstar series, we're trying to highlight a guy who didn't get a ton of snaps or kind of flew under the radar and has the potential to break out as a solid contributor in the next season. And for us, for the Giants, that's Jonathan Hankins. And there's nothing I love better than big, fat, run-stopping defensive tackles, and he is perfect for that role. I know a lot of people are worried that Linval Joseph can, you know, was a big loss for the Giants. I know a lot of people in national media were saying that they had to re-sign him, but I also think a lot of people don't know how good Jonathan Hankins was last season. So, you know, coming out of college, the worry with him and why he fell to the second round of the draft was he wasn't exactly a big pass-rushing force, so he looked more of like a run stopper. And frankly, that's kind of what he showed last year, too. He only had three quarterback pressures, so it's not like he was wreaking havoc there. But he actually was our highest-graded run-stopping defensive tackle for the Giants. And he actually, his run defense grade, despite playing a third of the snaps that Linval Joseph did, was higher than Joseph.
Wow.
So he had a tough time getting on the field, and this is why I said Tom Coughlin, he always relies on his veterans over the rookies, and you saw early in the season Sean Rogers was getting snaps over Hankins. But Hankins, he actually got the chance to play in Week 5 against the Eagles, and he absolutely abused Jason Kelce. And like I said, Kelce was our highest-graded center last season, and he had one of the worst run defensive grades run blocking grades we've given to a center in our history of grading. So
wow.
I mean, that's how bad Hankins and the Giants abused him that week. And finally, when Sean Rogers went down for the season, midseason, Hankins finally got the chance to play a decent amount of snaps, and he just every game he showed that he can be a force. And what's so good about him is he's so big that he can hold up at the point of attack. He can take on double teams, and you just can't move him. And he's also so quick for his size that you'll have teams asking guards to pull around and block him, or centers to reach block him, and he just beats them to the hole every time. It's silly how they're asking him to reach block Jonathan Hankins. So yeah, I think he could definitely be granted it was a smaller sample size, but based on his run grade, he actually had the third highest run defense grade per snap of any defensive tackle in the league last season throughout the entire NFL. So, you know, like I said, it's not a ton of snaps so far, but the results are very good, and I think that Hankins can be that guy who Joseph was for a fraction of the price.
Pete Domelatis, Pro Football Focus. Pete, before you say goodbye, why don't you just kind of tell the people what Pro Football Focus does, where they find you guys, and what services you provide in case they want to check it out.
Yep, so if you go to profootballfocus.com, our motto is we grade every player on every play in every game. So we're looking at, we're assigning grades to offensive linemen and how they're blocking, and to cornerbacks and how they're covering, and how they're facing the targets into their coverage, for linebackers and how they're doing against the run. All that nitty-gritty advanced X's and O's stuff. But we put it out there for you in a nice, easy-to-read grid, and you can look through. If you sign up for our premium stats, it's $26.99 for the year. You can look through all of our grades and see who the best run-stopping linebackers are, who are the best cornerbacks in coverage, which center is the best run-blocking center in the league last season and all the way back to 2007. So, that's something that we do for our premium subscribers. And if you go on the site anyway, even if you don't subscribe, you can look at all the articles that we're posting up there. We're now doing our depth chart series and rating every guy on every team and what their outlook is for this season. And we actually posted the Giants yesterday. So if you look through, and that's what we spoke about earlier in this conversation, but you can see kind of where we're stacking each guy and where we think the roster holes are for the Giants as they are right now.
Pete, great stuff as always. Let's catch up during training camp, and then at some point I'll get your prediction for the season. But it's too early right now. But we will talk to you down the road end of August. All right, pal?
Thank you, John. Good talking to you.
Hey, great stuff, Pete. Thanks a lot. That's Pete Domelatis from Pro Football Focus, PFF_Pete on Twitter. Give him a follow. And, guys, that Pro Football Focus stuff really is invaluable. It really is. I can't tell you how valuable of a tool it is when, you try to break down these games, you figure out what guys are. And obviously, it's not a perfect rating system, but these guys do watch all the games. They go through all the tape, and they do a fantastic job. So good stuff there from Pete. Love to talk to him during the offseason. Gives us a nice, unique perspective on where we sit with the New York Football Giants. And really, he kind of echoed all the stuff we've talked about the last couple of months. So I think we know where the Giants are at right now. We know what to keep an eye on during training camp. 201-939-4513. Now, three of you guys held to that whole interview. Bravo. Golf clap. Seriously. Good job. So I will take you in the order of which you called, and I'll try to get through all you guys pretty quickly. Let's go to Rocky in Panama City. Rocky, you're up first. What's going on?
What's going on, John?
Hey, Rock.
Yeah, it's been a while since I called. First, I wanted to say, LOL, Ben from New York. I agree with Lance. We might need to bring him in to be a motivational speaker to start the season. I could not stop laughing when he called in. But I didn't want to beat a dead horse with the weirdo thing, but I thought we kind of should have kept him. It was it wasn't going to hurt us. But everybody's, you got to send a message. And what type of message are you sending when you bring Thurman in and he just failed a drug test for Seattle last
Just once.
Remember, it's just once. If Lojo failed one drug test and this was his first time he failed, he'd still be on this roster. It was three times. I mean, how many times?
Three.
But then you bring another guy in that just had failed one, and I was like, okay, well. But it is what it is. I've heard a couple concerns about the pass rush, and I was thinking outside of Geno Atkins and Aaron Donald, we probably have the three best pass rush and defensive tackles from that three technique in the league with Bromley and Jenkins and Kelsey. Barr and Bromley and Kelsey make the team.
You mean Jenkins you're talking about? Right.
Jenkins, Bromley, and Kelsey.
Right. Well, I mean, I would hesitate before you start calling Jay Bromley one of the best three-technique pass rushers in the league. I think we're a little premature on that one.
Okay, yeah. Granted. I remember you saying the other day that this team looks like it reminds you of the 07 team. I was thinking more of the 2000 team when we was that first seed and finished 12-4.
Well, you know what? Let me think about that. You got Tiki as a one running back, Eli. You know what? It's not bad. They're missing that Strahan type of pass rusher, but I'll have to think about that a little bit more.
Okay, and I've been a big advocate of the hybrid balanced defense, the 3-4 and the 4-3.
Yeah.
I was wondering in OTAs, have you seen them stay more and Kiwi up at outside linebacker and shift Jenkins to left defensive end and bring McClain into inside like he used to play in Baltimore alongside Beeson?
I don't think Mathias Kiwanuka will get moved from defensive end. I think that's going to be his position for the remainder of his Giants career, in my opinion.
Okay, yeah, that's probably best. And one more thing, John, and then let some other callers come in. Everybody keeps talking about our secondary so good, and I like our cornerbacks. I really think we got depth there, but has anybody looked at what the Colts have at receiver? Remember, I was a big advocate for getting Moncrief. They've got Nick, T.Y. Hilton, Reggie Wayne, Dante Moncrief, and Darius Haywood Bey. I mean, I'm glad we got the corners we do because we're going to need them come time we play the Colts.
Well, you know what? You know, Rocky, a lot of that's going to do with how healthy Reggie Wayne is coming off that injury last season and whether or not Akeem Nicks can regain his form. So that receiving core can either be awesome or maybe it's not going to be that good if Wayne and Nicks don't look like their old selves.
Right. If they do, though, we might be in trouble that game, John. But I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Rock. 201-939-4513. Chris in Pennsylvania. Chris, you're up next.
Hey, what's going on, John? Good morning.
What's up, Chris?
Hey, so Pete was talking about, he said we had the fourth best roster in the NFC East, he said at the beginning.
The Pro Football Focus rated the rosters in, of the NFC East rosters, they had the Giants rated fourth in the division. That is correct.
So he said he admitted in that same breath that we had the best defense and the worst offense. So
that's correct.
My math must be incorrect because best defense, worst offense doesn't seem like it's going to end up last in the division. In fact, with a division that's so heavily offensive weighted, I feel that puts us at an advantage because all the other defenses are so far behind that even with our mediocre offense, we can, you know, score 17, 21 points a game and still have a really good chance to win.
Well, I mean, I think it depends on how dominant you would rate the Giants' defense. I mean, I think some people would argue, and again, this is me playing devil's advocate here, that with the Giants' less-than-stellar pass rush, there is a relatively lower ceiling for the defense unless you get that pass rush going to where it was a couple of years ago. So I'm not sure if people see the Giants' defense as a top-five defense right now. Just because you're a top-five defense in the NFC Just because you're the top defense in the NFC East doesn't necessarily make you a top five defense in the NFL or, frankly, even a top 10 defense in the NFL because I'm not sure either the Redskins, Eagles, or Cowboys will be in the top 15 or even be in the top half of the league defensively this year. So let's say theoretically you got the Giants as like the 12th ranked defense, 13th ranked defense, 21st or 20th ranked offense, something like that. Again, I'm just throwing theoretically out there how you could, you know, work those rankings to come to the conclusion that Pro Football Focus did.
Yeah, and Pete was super knowledgeable, very, very unique position that he took, and actually I'd kind of like to hear more of, contributors like that that kind of give you a more numbers-based approach instead of just their gut feeling. I really like that. One of the things I wanted to bring up also is the running back position for us.
Sure.
You know, right now we have five running backs on the team. How do you see all five of those running backs making this team this year?
I don't. I think you only have four running backs. I mean, I know Dan Salamon here has a theory that they might not even carry a fullback if you carry a few tight ends, and you know, then maybe you carry the four running backs and they'll work it that way. I still think they're going to carry a fullback just for those short yardage goal line situations. As for the running backs, right now, unless he shows me a lot more than he has in the past in training camp, I do not think Michael Cox will be on this team. That's just my guess. I don't know anything. That's my theory, and I think your four running backs going into the year next year, active on your roster, will be Rashad Jennings, David Wilson, Payne Hillis, and Andre Williams. And I think Williams will have a chance of getting a shirt every week, and perhaps Payne Hillis would be the guy that's you know, on your 53 but not active on game days. But that all depends how Williams looks in training camp, and frankly, whether or not David Wilson comes back healthy, which it looks like he is going to at this point.
That's really good news about David Wilson. I know you say he's the most explosive running back you've seen, you know, since you've been here, which
yep.
I would probably agree with that as well. And you know, I know that a couple weeks back you got old Paulie Dottino saying that Peyton Hillis was walking around the place looking like Rambo, just ripped to shreds, and like really worked out in the off season. So I'm kind of hot on Peyton Hillis this year, see what he can bring. But I know he's got, you know, those fumble issues, and
that's a big thing.
I think maybe, yeah. And you may have even mentioned this year that he dropped a couple balls in OTAs, and you're not even getting hit by anybody. You know, people are just swatting at you. So you know, I'd like to see him make the team, but I can understand like how he doesn't get a shirt each week. And then Michael Cox, you know, it's difficult for me just to dismiss a recent draft pick like that, despite him being a seventh-round draft pick. You know, I feel like we should invest a little bit more in these guys, you know, even the later rounds. Like Ahmad Bradshaw, seventh-round draft pick. Awesome teammate, you know, awesome player for us. So it's kind of disappointing to see that, you know, Michael Cox really isn't panning out. But I can certainly understand it because I saw the same things on the field as you did, which was basically nothing from the guy. So that's too bad.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say nothing. I just think they've on the depth chart, there's a first-round pick ahead of them. There's a fourth-round pick ahead of them. And then you have Peyton Hillis, who you know, is a very good pass protector, and that gives him the advantage over Cox. So, I mean, it's not that he's a bad player. It's just that he has, I think, guys that are probably a little bit more talented with most of the guys, you know, some of them with more experience ahead of him.
Right. And, you know, I'm super hot on the fullback position for us. We've always used that position well, and I think that it's really a position that we need because last year I feel that the offensive line did so poorly is because we had zero support from our backfield and tight end crew from chipping, you know, the standpoint of that. You know, these defensive ends now, they're so athletic that you need to give your tackles like an extra half a step to get in position so that way they can really man up against these guys. Otherwise, you know, Will Beattie, as athletic as he is, he's got no chance against some of these guys, you know. So I feel that, you know, with the fullback position, you know, those big blockers, whether it's John Connor or Hynoski, I think they can really get in the way, you know, on their way to a route. You know, I just remember Brandon Jacobs going back. I mean, he was the chipper of chippers, man. He would knock some guys on their butts going out for his route. And the offensive tackle just basically had to keep him on the ground at that point.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not even sure if it's fair to call what Brandon Jacobs did chipping. It was more like road paving.
Yeah, straight up. So, hey, man, I mean, people are comparing Andre Williams to Jacobs a little bit. Hopefully he can sort of get in that mindset, and hopefully, you know, some of the offensive coaches can really teach these guys to love blocking as much as handling the ball because, I mean, football is about knocking people around, you know, and if you can do that and catch the ball in the same series and the same play, I think that's a great play for you. So, yeah, I just wanted to go over the running back situation a little bit. I mean, I see the five running backs on the roster right now, and basically I feel that David Wilson's injury is pretty much the biggest question mark. I hope he's healthy, and I hope he learns how to carry the ball. From what I've seen, you know, he's really carrying it with two hands. But, yeah, I think that's going to be a huge position for us and to help out the offensive line as well going out on their routes and really picking up the blitzes and shipping as well. So
thanks, Chris.
Thanks a lot, John. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for calling in. Good stuff. A couple of things on the running backs. One, I see Williams as almost a cross between Bradshaw and Jacobs. You know, he's not as big as Brandon Jacobs. Certainly no running backs really are. But he has, I think, that mentality when he runs to take it to people, run over people, break tackles. But he's in that, you know, more of a compact form like Bradshaw was, though he is bigger physically than Ahmad Bradshaw, especially height-wise. So I think he's almost a combination of the two. Where Peyton Hillis is going to find his playing time on this team is in his pass protection, because much like Jacobs did, he can blow people up, helping out on those blocking situations. He made some mental mistakes last year, sure, but generally speaking, he does a very good job protecting the quarterback, and that's what's going to get him on the field. 201-939-4513. Andrew's in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up, John? Peyton Hillis, I like him, and he's the Larry Zonka of our era. And what surprised me, I told you before, was that one play he got really low and elevated, like levitated on the above the ground. So I was really impressed that someone his size could get that low, and he was able to get lower than Brandon Jacobs. And the new running back that you just talked about, the draft choice, Andre, right, his name is Andre?
Yeah, Andre Williams, that's correct.
He's the best of both worlds. Like, he's big, but he's compact enough to be, you know, elusive and low and get leverage. And do you think Cox will end up on the practice squad? And if he is on the practice squad, will another team sign him?
I think Michael Cox played in too many games on the active roster last year to qualify for the practice squad, Andrew. I'd have to double-check that. But I don't I don't think he's practice squad eligible.
Oh, I didn't know that there was a rule. I just thought it's their first two seasons. And the guy who's replacing Justin Tuck, which is big shoes to fill, but Tuck was, you know, injured a little at the end of his career. So it's not as difficult as 2007 or 8 replacing Tuck then. But can you tell me a little bit about the guy from Denver that they signed? He's going to be the starter. At this point, right?
I mean, I think Robert Ayers, I would say probably Kiwi and JPP are the starters right now. And I've seen JPP actually play on Tuck's side a little bit more than I thought. You know, Ayers, I think, is going to be very solid. He's not going to give you the pass rush production, I think, that Justin Tuck gave you. But I think he's going to be just as good against the run. In fact, I think he and Justin Tuck's rush defense grades via Pro Football Focus last year were almost identical, to be quite honest with you. So I believe that they won't lose a ton going from Tuck to Ayers.
Good. You said you think they will lose a ton or will not lose a ton?
They will not lose a ton.
Oh, good, because Tuck, like I said, he was still a good player, but he was not as dominant as when he was younger and injured. And I'll let you go by just quickly, I'll say something quickly about Thailand. You're going to Bangkok. When you go to, I call it the ancient city. There's like a palace and a closed-off part of the city.
And the reclining Buddha is in that area, I would assume, correct?
Correct. And then there's a museum close by and a temple on the top of a mountain. And when we went to the ancient city first, which is the more popular attraction, but we made the mistake of going at the hottest point in the day. I wore a black shirt, and then when you're in there, they make you wear, like, cover pants if you're wearing shorts, because they don't want you to disrespect, like, the temple, so it makes even harder, dark green pants. And when I showed up, I was like, oh, look at all the European, the German tourists that look like you with their Thailand T-shirts and the elephant and their backpack in the water and sweating profusely. But within an hour, I was ready to pass out, and I was like, why didn't I bring water or drink water? But
right,
if you
Andrew.
Tell your wife to bring, like, a little tote,
yeah,
you know, a little foldable umbrella, because that's what the Thai women do, don't wear black shirts. And if you go to the museum, it's just a quick tour and, like, the history of Thailand, and then they take you to the top. It's enclosed, like, roof where you overlook the city, and there's a cafe. So I would go there first if it's hot, and then the temple on the mountain, it's sweet because as you get higher and higher, it's cooler and breezy. So the timing of things, so I was thinking, what will I tell you? And it sounds trivial, but it's extremely important, because if you get it at the wrong day, it's like almost deadly, and we went to this real elaborate zoo called Night Safari. But like I said, the rain, don't fear the rain. It rained before we went. It was cloudy, and it was just real awesome zoo. And I kept thinking, we're so lucky that it's not sunny. It would, you know, it was hot and humid, but it was bearable. So anything with the mall, like if you hit a mall in the middle of the day, I was always happy when we did that. But that's about it.
Thanks, Andrew.
And I'll talk to you later in the week. Thanks.
All right. Sounds good, pal. Always appreciate the time and advice. Yeah, we're actually only doing one day in Bangkok. A, because, you know, the military is kind of still all over the place there, from what I understand. So we want to try to limit that time as much as possible. We want to see, like, the big temple, the reclining Buddha, and the floating markets. That's pretty much it. 201-939-4513. Let's see. Derek is in Atlanta, Georgia. He's been holding the longest. Derek, what's up?
Hey, hi, John. How's it going today?
Doing well, Derek. What's up with you?
Hey, John, did you play Madden football?
You know, I did back in the day. I must admit, I have not probably played a Madden football game since maybe 2007 or 2008.
Well, I play a lot, and, you know, I play in a kind of like a league.
That sounds cool.
We play every Friday.
Derek, I got to tell you, I wish I had the time. I just don't have the time for the video games anymore. It stinks. I love my Halo. I love my Call of Duty. I love my Madden. I'm going to date myself here. I love my Tecmo Bowl back in the day. I just don't have the time for it anymore.
Well, the reason I was saying that, because, you know, I started the season, and I played like a basic defense and everything, because you're just trying to learn new playbooks and everything.
Right.
And I look at Perry Fuel last year, and I was thinking, like, you know, every time I see the Giants blitz, they blitz the linebacker up the middle. They have no exotic blitzing, and they have no, you know, what do you call them, T-stunts, and they don't have any linebacker crossing. And usually by the end of the year, if I'm not running those type of blitzes, I can't get to the quarterback at all. And because the players is going to catch up to everything what you're doing. You know, the good players, the good teams, they're going to catch up to the regular blitzing, the regular package. And when I look at the Giants, they blitz, you know, they rush their four players. I don't see too many stunts. I don't see too many linebackers coming up acting like they're going to blitz in a hole just to make the linebacker, you know, the tackles think that, hey, we might have to pick this guy up or, you know, identify another blitzer. And I'm thinking we're just way too vanilla. And I don't know if you've seen the same thing.
Well, Derek, look, I don't think there's any secret that the Giants haven't run a lot of exotic blitzes over the last couple of years. I mean, I don't think there's any mystery that that hasn't happened. We've all seen the same thing. But I'll say this. I think one of the reasons they haven't done that is because, A, they've had faith in years past. And, you know, last year they made a mistake having faith in this, that they could get to the quarterback with their four-down defensive linemen. And quite frankly, they didn't have the quality or depth at cornerback to leave their guys out there on an island one-on-one to cover some of these top wide receivers. I mean, look, the NFC East got, you know, and that's six out of your 16 games on the schedule, and they got wide receivers that'll burn you if you cover them one-on-one. So it was tough. Now, I agree. I think the Giants need to be much more aggressive with their blitzing, whether it's corners off the edge, linebackers in the middle, coming off the edge, bringing up a safety. I think now with the cornerbacks they have, the Giants need to be much more aggressive, bringing pressure on the quarterback. I agree 100%.
I sure hope so, because, I mean, last year I wouldn't probably bring any corners off the edge myself. But, you know, I look at these other teams and they bring a linebacker up in a hole, and then they drop him out and bring the other linebacker, and it confuses the line a little bit, you know. Or they bring all the linebackers up to the front, and you have to pick out which one is blitzing. Well, I didn't see any of that with the Giants, and, you know.
Well, Derek, even worse, when they did bring a linebacker, the Giants linebackers the last couple of years have been awful getting to the quarterback. It's almost as though they just purposely run into offensive linemen at times.
Yeah, I mean, but you're coming from your normal spot, And, you know, you blitz it from the normal spot, give the running back a whole bunch of time to see where you're coming from. And they know that the Giants are not going to send an exotic blitz. So, I mean, either the middle linebacker is coming or maybe the strong side linebacker. But, you know, it's –
Now, Derek, keep in mind, though, the last couple of years they have stood Justin Tuck up a little bit. At times the last couple of years they'll stand Justin Tuck up. He'll kind of walk behind the other defensive lineman, and then he'll kind of rush from that bat position. So they have used that the last couple of years.
I did see that maybe 2 years ago. I don't remember seeing that much last year. But anyway, just hope that he changes that. You know, we can get a little bit more creative with our blitzing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And maybe with the new personnel, you know, maybe we can
I agree.
Come with other types of blitz. But I was going to ask you, if Beckham had the same season as Steve Smith had in his second year, would that be a successful season?
Let me see. Let me look at Steve. Do you have Steve Smith's second-year stats in front of you?
I did, no.
All right, hold on. I can bring him up. That's fine.
Yeah.
Let me see. Steve Smith. That's Steve Smith of the Panthers. That's not going to help me. Let's see. Steve Smith, Giants. I know to search for Steve Smith, Giants stats. Let me see here. Steve Smith in his second year. Here we go. The New York Giants and the St. Louis Rams are good buddies at Pro Football Reference. Here we go. In Steve Smith's second year, he played 16 games, started 12, at 57 catches for 574 yards and one touchdown. I think the 57 catches is a good number. If he has 57 catches, I'd like him to have more than 574 yards because I think he's much faster than Steve Smith was, much more elusive after the catch. So I'd sign up for the 57 catches, but if he gets 57 catches, I'd like to probably see somewhere between 750 and 800 yards receiving, give or take.
And I think that'll work because I think all our receivers will go up in actual targets and reception with this new short game, passing game.
Right.
Which brings me to another thing was the Dallas. I guess Dallas Cowboys may be the second best offense in the division.
You know what? I can make the argument that they have the best. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on how Robert Griffin III plays. If Robert Griffin III steps up now and is a monster year, Derek, I think the Redskins might have the best offense in the division. But I can make the argument for Dallas, and I can make the argument for Philly, too. I mean, hell, I mean, Nick Foles was great last year. Who else in the division has Darren Sproles and LeSean McCoy on the same team, which is ridiculous? They have two of the best tight ends in the division in Brent Celek and Zach Ertz. So I could honestly make the argument, I think, for any one of those three teams as having the best offense in the division.
But I was looking at, you know, I guess Pro Football Focus guy said the Dallas Cowboys roster, wide receiver roster, is a lot better than the Giants.
Yeah.
Or someone. And I mean, besides Witten, that stands out as, you know, obviously he's way better than anything that we have. But comparable to the other receivers, we're only about 5 or 10 catches off of the rest of their receivers. Dez Bryant had 93 catches. I don't know what Cruz was, but he can get 93 catches.
Well, yeah, but that's catch number. You have to look at yards and touchdowns, too. I don't think there are many people in the league that will argue that Victor Cruz is a better wide receiver than Dez Bryant.
Well, I think that I don't know how many touchdowns did he had a kind of bad year last year.
Yeah, Victor Cruz, I think, finished with, what, 4 touchdowns last year, 4 or 5? I can double-check that.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Dez Bryant is a lot better receiver. But then besides that, Terrence Williams matches right up with Reuben Randall.
I think that's fair.
And then Cole Beasley is a Gerald Jernigan. I mean, he has basically the same numbers and everything. So I don't see anything else on here.
Yeah,
I mean,
but Jason Witten, you can't just say, well, besides Jason Witten, that's 90 catches you're just throwing away,
dude.
Okay.
Jason Witten has 73 catches. 73 catches, right?
Yeah.
How many catches? That's the extra 30 catches than what we project our tight end to have. You know, maybe another 30. I mean, so I don't see where that's something that we can't make up. I mean, I still think that whoever our tight end is going to get 50 catches.
Well,
so, Jason Witten is still going to get 75 catches.
Derek, honestly, if a single Giants tight end is 50 catches this year, I'll be very surprised.
I would think they have to in this
offense.
Why? I mean, you're going 5 yards and turning up. What are you going? You're not running down the seams anymore. Maybe if Grimble starts, maybe he has the talent to do that, but they're not going to ask any of these other tight ends that we have to run down the seams for 15 yards.
Do we even know how much they're going to send these tight ends to catch? What if they decide to play 4 wide receivers a lot because they don't have a lot of faith in the tight ends?
Well, that means we have another guy on the field that can catch passes then.
So I agree.
That'll make up this.
I can count 5 tight ends on the Cowboys, Eagles, and Redskin rosters that I'd rather have than anybody on the Giants roster right now.
That's no doubt. That's no doubt about that. Everybody agrees that. I mean, we're looking at if we get 45 catches to 50 catches from the Giants, we'll be ecstatic. So we definitely know that. I think that with the backfield, too, I don't know how many what the new emphasis are throwing to the back out of the backfield. You know, maybe we'll catch up to some of those catches that DeMarco Murray has. I just don't see – I mean, I'm trying to get away that I'm trying to push the Giants better offense than last. And, you know, because if you have the worst offense and the best defense, to me that's adding up to a 8-8 season. So –
Hey, but look, these are just preseason predictions here. Guys can play a lot better than what you project. Things can come together. The NFL is a weird league. You know, last year everyone had the Eagles as last place in the NFC East. What happened? They won the division. So I wouldn't put too much stock into what me or anybody else says right now about where the Giants rank in the division. All we're doing is going off of the roster and past performance. But as you well know, the NFL is a year-to-year league. Anything can change. Thanks for the call, pal.
Yeah. All right, take it easy.
Be good, man. 201-939-4513. Got 2 more calls in the line, then we're going to say goodbye. Let's go to Steve in D.C. next. Steve, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's happening, John? How you doing?
Doing well, Steve.
Hey, listen, you know, I'm not going to be the dead horse, but I could tell you, you know, the guest speaker from Pro Football Focus, whatever, I mean, you know, all he did was irritate a whole room with me. You know, a couple of wounds. You know, obviously, you know, I just think that, you know, that I think, personally, this show is kind of, you know, I mean, you guys haven't talked bad about Will Hill's play, but I just don't really feel like y'all giving him the credit he deserved as a player. And hopefully, you know, after hearing what this guy said about how they had him ranked and everything, you realize exactly why so many people are really upset. I mean,
Steve, I have never said anything bad about Will Hill as a player. I called him perhaps the second most impactful player on the Giants' defense last year. What else do you want me to say?
Well, first of all, he was the most impactful. But, no, I want you to say he was the best. He was the best. He might have been the best player we got in the whole team. You know, he's had in the whole team. I mean, you know, I don't want to beat that up, you know. But I'm telling you, man, I just think that, you know, hey, man, you know, I just don't think people realize exactly what he meant to our defense. You know, I'm going to leave that alone, John, because, I mean, no, nobody said he was a bad player, but I just feel like, you know, he just has not given enough credit on how good of a player he is. I think he's going to end up in Dallas, personally. But with that said, I'm going to leave it alone, John, you know, because I had a couple of things I want to talk
about. Sure.
Hopefully you give me some time here. But the Chris Lee, you know, thing, that, you know, that bothers me because I don't think – I'm so tired of talking about people's character, how great they are, as creep and all that stuff. That's not going to win us a Super Bowl, John. And I know if it was anybody other than Tom Coughlin, you know, son-in-law, we would have probably cut ties with him.
Steve, and you realize Chris Knee renegotiated his contract down to basically a veteran's minimum, right?
I didn't know the exact details of it, John, but it's a roster spot. I'm still hearing a roster spot being taken. That's what I'm hearing right now.
Whoa, time out. Hold on, wait. There's somebody, hold on. I'm going to bring up the Giants roster right now, and I'm going to play a little game with you, Steve. Hold on 1 second. I want to bring up the Giants roster. Let me see. Now, all right. I'm going to throw out a name out there, okay? And you tell me if you think Chris
Knee
has more potential to help the Giants team this year than a couple of guys in this roster. I'm going to name all offensive linemen for you, too. So we're going to make this easy. Do you think that Chris Knee or Troy Kropog has a better chance of helping the Giants this year?
I don't even know who Troy Kropog is.
That's my point. That's my point. He is a tackle on your New York Football Giants. So is a kid named Stephen Baker, and it's not the touchdown maker, all right? So having Christie on your roster now, and by the way, Steve, I'm being honest with you. Watching him in practice, he looks more mobile. He looks better than he has in two seasons. So, look, do I know he's going to stay healthy and contribute this year? I don't. But I think based on the other guys you can bring in, I think it's worth a shot in the dark to see if he can give you something to guard this year.
I like Chris Lee, so I'm not going to beat that. I'm not going to beat that issue up. I'm really not. But I did want to talk about a couple other things, Don, this morning. Number one is, first of all, I think we're going to end up keeping one fullback, too, and I think that fullback should be exactly who the pro football guy said, you know, it's the best one we have, which is John Connor. So I don't think that as much as Hillis may put on all these muscles and this, that, and the other, muscles don't play football either. So I'd like to see us keep Michael Cox over Hillis. And I want to know what your thoughts are. I think he has more promise. He's younger. I think we already have pretty much what Peyton Hillis, he's not an overly good blocker. He's, you know, he's definitely sufficient, and he's definitely not a super goal line threat either. You know, so I think, you know, with these two running backs that we just picked up along, you know, with hopefully a healthy Wilson and Cox, I don't think, you know, I don't see how we could be keeping Peyton Hillis when we haven't really given Michael Cox.
Steve, hold on. What has Michael Cox shown you? I mean, seriously.
More explosiveness, and the fact that he has been undercoached is what I've seen.
Undercoached? I don't know what that means.
Well, he hasn't gotten any real time or opportunity, in my opinion.
Well, do you think maybe he didn't get any opportunity last year because the Giants coaches couldn't trust him to go where he had to go where he needed to go and be where he had to be on the field last year?
Listen, John,
That's the same reason, Steve, he couldn't get on the field in Michigan because he didn't know what he was doing.
John, well, if that's the case, and we knew that before we drafted him, well, what the hell did we draft him for?
Because it's a seventh-round pick. You draft athletes and you roll the dice on them. He's a seventh-round pick. Do you want me to name some seventh-round picks over the course of the Giants' years? Do you remember Stoney Woodson? How good of a player was Stoney Woodson?
John, here's the thing. Talent is one thing, but if you got somebody who's not able to learn, you need to be able to come to that conclusion and come to that conclusion quick. And, you know, and if that's the case, then we should have cut ties with him, you know, last year. My gut feeling, John, is telling me that, like a lot of other young players, we just don't really give him enough opportunity. You know, I'm not saying that he was showing a lot during practice because I really don't know, John. But I'll tell you one thing. He showed me a whole lot more explosive than Peyton Hillis has.
Steve, he averaged like 2.5 yards per carry.
How many carries did he get?
How many did Peyton Hillis get?
Listen, I've seen enough out of Peyton Hillis. I'm sorry. We've seen the best of him.
Steve, here's the thing. I at least know that Peyton Hillis can do two things well. I know he can catch the football. I know that he can pass protect. I don't know that Michael Cox can do anything well enough to be on an NFL roster.
Well, Michael Cox can return kicks. I know that much.
And by the way, I also know for a fact that Michael Cox isn't as good of a kickoff returner as Quinton Demps. He's not as good of a kickoff returner as David Wilson. He's not as good of a kickoff returner as Travis Beckham Jr. And he's not as good of a kickoff returner as Trindon Holliday. So right now he's your fifth kickoff returner. Fifth.
Okay, well, listen, I'll give you that, John. There's no debate in that. But how old this thing is this? What has Peyton Hillis really showed us other than pass protection?
I just said
not that good at that.
Steve, I just said I'm not sure Peyton Hillis will even get a jersey every Sunday if he's on the roster. What else do you want me to say? I just think he's better than Michael Cox.
Well, I think we have more use for Cox than we do Peyton Hillis. That's just my opinion. You know, I like to see these young guys get a little bit more opportunity. And I don't really feel like we gave him enough. Not in games. I don't know what goes on in practice, John, but I do see he showed good signs of explosiveness in the return game, but I realize we don't necessarily need that this year. But, you know, we let the running back coach go. I'm assuming we had a good reason for doing so. I mean, this guy needs to be coached up. He has some explosiveness. There is talent there. I mean, do you think he has no talent or as well as he can't learn, or is it, you know, or what? Because I'm seeing talent. I don't know what's going on in the classroom, John, but I see some explosiveness there. You know, I mean,
I honestly, Steve, don't see the same type of explosive physical traits you're talking about. I don't. I mean, I think he's fine. I think he's okay. But I don't. Nothing stands out to me, to be honest with you. I haven't seen anything that's made me think, oh, wow, this guy's a diamond in the rough. I haven't seen it.
Well, hey, you know, hey, I can't argue what you see. I just said on return game, and it definitely looked like he needed some better coach. Well, I ain't gonna say better coaching. Like, he didn't know exactly what he was doing in the backfield. I just felt like if he, you know, once he learned, got a better grip to the offense and more opportunity, you know, he was seeing. Just kind of felt like it looked like, you know, somebody out there was nervous because he only got one or two touches. I just really feel like we didn't give him enough touches in any particular game. And when we brought him in, it was so predictable that he was going to run the game. He didn't have a chance. You know, I mean, I blow that on the play calling again. I mean, I really just didn't. John, I can't go by play, but I remember the impression I was left, and I just felt like he was never really put in the right position to have success.
I guess
he was only brought in for.
Steve, I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree on this one, brother.
No problem, man. No problem, man. You know, but, hey, that's all I had. I'm going to take more time today, man.
That's all right, dude. Thanks for calling in, Steve.
Great show, man. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Appreciate it. And our final call of the show, batting cleanup, is the man sitting on his back porch. Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's going on?
John, I'm sitting on my back porch getting ready to go eat some Thai food for lunch.
Nice!
Yeah, I'm heading for a Thai restaurant for lunch. You know, here's what I want to know, John. When are you going to put me on in front of Steve instead of behind Steve? Steve's always a tough act to follow.
Well, you got to call in a little bit earlier. You got to call in earlier, Len.
Cleanup. I can hit cleanup, John. Listen, the report from Pro Football Focus, sobering, but in the end, not terribly different from the way we've been thinking.
No, not at all.
If you look at it off of last year's horrible performance, and you go down the key positions, you know, the difference is a stark. I mean, we're not going to go down every position, John, but, you know, just take left tackle in the East. I mean, Will Beatty, even at his best, is fourth. I mean, the other three guys are Pro Bowlers.
That's true. And by the way, Len, I should just point this out very quickly. Angelo on Twitter points out, I guess I accidentally said Travis Beckham Jr. instead of Odell Beckham Jr. when I was talking about the kickoff returners. Point
oh
made. I meant Odell Beckham Jr. Thank you, Angelo. I appreciate that. And you're right. I should not confuse those two people. My bad.
Oh, and I think I think Beckham has already been released, by the way.
Oh, has he? I didn't catch that.
Yes. I believe he's already been released. Did he sign in Seattle or Buffalo?
He signed in Seattle. Ramsey's Barden signed in Buffalo. So I think that's where you're getting the confusion. And by the way, remember, I'm not surprised. Travis Beckham plays his best in big-time games. So, you know, he's not a guy that's going to wow you in the spring. But when you need him in that one game in 3 years, he'll make one good catch and he'll try to ride his coattails on that for half a decade.
Listen, I think what we have to hope for with this offense, and one of the callers alluded to this, and you followed up on it as well, is that, you know, the stark difference at left tackle gets minimized a bit because Beatty plays better. And at tight end, that we get some production out of the tight end, or the differences between our tight ends and the other tight ends, and you've already talked about it, you know, four and five tight ends in the division that are better than anybody that we've got. But we got to hope we get some kind of production that it's not as stark a difference. And even at running back, hopefully Jennings comes. So, I mean, the three running backs on these other teams are simply better than anything we had, John.
Now, you can argue both running backs on Philly are, and Sproles and McCoy.
You know, and you look at, you know, Morris here in Washington and, you know, what they've got in Dallas. I mean, you know, we're running fourth at that position. We're running fourth at center. But we got to hope that J.D. Walton and Jennings, you know, minimize the differences.
Correct.
Maybe we're running fourth, but we're better than we were last year.
Hey, look, here's the bottom line to me, Len. This Giants season, in large part, and it's not my intention to put all the pressure on this one guy because it's not fair.
Yeah.
But, look, if Will B doesn't come back and play close to what he did 2 years ago, this team's going to have some issues. I mean, look around this division. You have Jason Peters. You got the guy
Williams.
In Washington, Trent Williams.
Trent
thank
Williams.
You. And Trent. then you have Tyron Smith, who maybe is the second-best starting
Smith.
Tackle in football.
I mean,
those are three of the best tackles in the whole league.
I was going to say three Pro Bowlers right
they
there.
They are, no question.
And then, you know, if you go down to, you know, the guy who's backing up Beatty at this point is actually getting, I want to say Barnes, but it's not.
Charlie Brown.
Yeah, Charlie Brown. Okay. You know, we got to cut into that difference in some shape, manner, or form. And then also, you know, I know we say that we'll probably say this just before the season starts again. You know, we got to get more out of our core players. I mean, we just got to get better. You know, our core players have to play better. I mean, your core players are the guys you rely on. If, you know, Will Hill was one of those core players, I think. He'd be on my list, top 10.
Nah, sure. Right? I agree.
If you can't rely on the guy, I mean, you can't even put him on the field. Now, it's a little difference in terms of performance. It wasn't Will's performance. It was other, you know, personal things going on with Will. But, geez, if your core 10, these guys just have to play better. I mean, and it starts with Eli. We can make all the excuses that we want. We need to get more production out of Eli.
And not even more production, Len. Fewer mistakes.
Yeah, fewer mistakes. Remember, I threw out the number. I wanted 12 interceptions. No more than 12 interceptions. No more than 12 interceptions. I'm hoping for no more than 15 sacks, but I don't know with that offensive line, particularly if Will Beatty doesn't come back. But I think, you know, it is these core guys. By the way, I'll take 50 catches from Beckham. If you give me 50 catches from all our tight ends combined, and I'm still saying, John, between 90 and 100 catches by those running backs, that's how we get right there. Last two games of the season, St. Louis, Philadelphia, and we're fighting for a playoff spot. Hey, John, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you,
Have
Len.
A good day.
Okay. Appreciate it, bud.
Bye-bye.
201-939-4513. Great job on the phones, everybody. Great job on Twitter today. We have an OTA today. Check out Giants.com for coverage all day long. Tomorrow, the players have off, no OTAs. I think they're still in meetings, though. And then OTAs on Thursday and Friday. And then mandatory minicamp next week. I'm with you tomorrow morning. I got to figure out some type of guest tomorrow. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll figure something out. And then we'll have Marks and Dettino. Anita Marks making her return on Thursday morning. And then Friday I'll be back, and next week we'll figure it out. So there you go. Everybody, great job. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. And we'll see you tomorrow morning on Giants.com. Have a good one.